Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents The Naked Viscount by Sally McKenzie. Narrated by Lynn Jensen.
Chapter 1. Edmund Smythe, Viscount Martin, tested the French window. It opened easily. The butler was shockingly lax, or more likely, drunk as an emperor. He pushed the window all the way up and stepped into poor dead Clarence Widmore's study. The Parker Roth ladies were currently in residence. He should drop a word in Parker Roth's ear. Stephen would want to know his mother and sister were not being properly looked after. This was London, after all. Any sort of riffraff might try to break in. Martin took a candle from the mantel and held it to the embers in the fireplace. It flared to life. Of course, if Parker Roth were living under this roof, he'd already know of the problem. But he couldn't fault the man for wanting to keep his own rooms. He'd like to do the same. The aunties were driving him mad. Winifred had arrived today with her parrot and monkey, so now all five of his paternal aunts and their pets were in residence. Zeus! Bedlam might be quieter than his townhouse at the moment. The worst of it was the women were convening to mount an attack on his single state. Aunt Winifred's arrival was especially alarming. She was a wily campaigner. He would have to be extremely alert until she returned to the country. He surveyed the room. Damn, it would help if he'd been given a hint where to look. Searching through every book for this mysterious sketch of French spies the Earl of Ardley wanted would keep him here until tomorrow. The Parker Roth ladies would not be out that long. He opened the nearest book and ruffled its pages. If he wasn't Widmore's neighbor and hadn't been so damn bored, he would have politely, or not so politely, declined Ardley's request. The man was a pompous ass with a decidedly odd kick to his gallop. But when Ardley had cornered him at White's, he'd been in the doldrums. The jollifications of the season were wearing very thin, and even his extracurricular activities, tracking down and eliminating underworld vermin, were proving painfully frustrating. If only he could discover the identity of the man behind so much of London's criminal activity. But he'd been stymied at every turn. Everyone knew the miscreant only as Satan. He was beginning to believe the fellow was indeed the incorporeal spirit of evil. He put the book back on the shelf and picked up another. Nothing about this little errand made sense. Paunchy, balding Widmore, a French spy? In all the years he'd lived next door to the fellow, he'd never once seen any evidence he was working for the French. Widmore had been odd, no question about that. But odd and treasonous were not synonymous. Hell, if one were considering odd associations, Ardley's connection with Widmore would be at the top of the list. Ardley had been at Lord Wolfson's estate when Widmore had met his untimely end, landing bare-arsed on a nest of adders. What Widmore had been doing capering about naked was not a question he wished to contemplate. And why had Ardley associated with Widmore at all if he'd suspected him of treason? Or, more to the point, why did he suddenly care about a supposed sketch of some French spies when Widmore was dead and the war was long over? He put the book he'd been examining back. He'd start with the desk instead. It didn't look promising. The wooden surface was as bare as a windswept moor. But perhaps something had got stuck in the back of a drawer. Or, better perhaps, there was a hidden compartment or two. Here was something interesting. Most people did not decorate their work areas with an object about 2 feet high draped in Holland cloth. The white fabric billowed in the breeze from the open window, giving it a rather ghostly appearance. Unlikely it had anything to do with what he was looking for, but he'd leave no stone unturned. He plucked off the cloth. Good God! He stared down at a statue of the god Pan. A very, excited Pan. Miss Jane Parker Roth sighed as she closed Frankenstein. It was always hard to finish a book one enjoyed. It was like leaving a good friend. She'd pleaded the headache so she could stay home from the Hammershams' musical evening and read. Mama must have suspected her malady was feigned, but she hadn't argued, thank goodness. She put the novel on the bedside table. One of the best things about coming to town was the lending libraries. Oh, the Priory had an extensive book collection, to be sure, but only a few were novels. Da had his poetry books, Mama had her art books, John and Stephen, her older brothers, had their horticultural books, but novels, no. One would think a painter and a poet would have very liberal ideas on what their children could read, but such was not the case. Lucy, the baby, was already 13 and had virtually memorized A Vindication of the Rights of Women. Yet Mama still would not let her read even Miss Austen's stories. Lucy was a resourceful girl, however, and had managed to smuggle into the house an impressive assortment of novels. Thankfully, Mama had given up on her when she'd made her come out, and now, at the ripe old age of 24, she could read whatever she wished, at least when she was in London. What should she read now? She didn't want to start a new book immediately, but she liked to have her next selection ready. Anticipation added to the delight. She'd been meaning to read Waverley for the longest time. She was quite a fan of Mr. Scott's stories, but she'd never read his first. She glanced at the clock. It was far too early to go to sleep. She'd just slip downstairs and see if by chance the book was in the Widmore's collection. Perhaps she'd even take a quick look at its opening pages. Jane climbed out of bed. Mama wouldn't be home for hours yet. Not that she'd been looking forward to the infernal caterwauling, as she'd put it, of the Hammersham twins, but she'd been greatly anticipating seeing her artist friends. She'd surely go off into a side room with them and catch up on all the art gossip. She might not come home before the sun rose. Jane put on her slippers. Her wrapper, unfortunately, was off to be washed. She'd spilled chocolate on it this morning. No matter. She'd only be a moment, and the servants were all in their quarters, celebrating the housekeeper Mrs. Brindle's birthday. She stepped into the hall. As she'd suspected, it was deserted. She made her way toward the stairs. If only she could spend all her time in London at the lending libraries and museums. But Mama had other plans, of course. It was the season, and she was still unwed. She couldn't plead a headache every night. Mama would have the physician at the door in a pig's whisker. The woman took her children's every twinge, every sniffle, very seriously. She sighed. So Mama would drag her to as many society events as she could, hoping her eldest daughter would inspire undying ardor in some gentleman's breast. Mama was living in air castles. When was she going to face the truth? This was her. Damn. Jane grabbed the banister and stopped on the top stair. Could it be? She counted on her fingers to be certain. Yes, this was the beginning of her 8th season. She wasn't just on the shelf. She was stuck to it like a leaky glue pot, which was just fine with her. She started down the stairs. She'd met all the eligible, and some not so eligible, society gentlemen and had found them all completely boring. Well, not all. There was Viscount Martin. 6 feet of elegantly attired muscle, with sapphire blue eyes, chestnut brown hair, and a damn dimple in his left cheek. Not that she'd noticed. She snorted. The man certainly hadn't noticed her, or if he had, he only thought of her as John and Stephen Parker Roth's younger sister. He'd never once asked her to stand up with him at any ball or assembly. She'd barely exchanged 2 words with him all these years. Of course, he didn't attend many social events. He came, briefly, to the first few each season and then vanished, and she'd wager she wasn't the only woman who'd made note of his habits in that regard. She glared at a plaster cherub, discreet enough to have avoided Mrs. Brindle's Holland cloths. Lord Martin didn't get dragged to every ball and breakfast, oh no! He was a man. He had the freedom to choose the path his life would take. He could stay on his estate like John, or go off to foreign lands like Stephen. When he finally decided it was time to start his nursery, he would just pick one of the many aristocratic girls displayed for his inspection on the marriage mart. Bah! A man's life was so much better than a woman's. Men could have adventures, while women must sit home darning socks and tending children. It was not fair. She reached the bottom of the stairs and looked around. There was still not a servant in sight. She just slipped down the hall and into the study. With luck, she'd find the books in some discernible order, but given the general state of the house, she'd more likely encounter a complete hodgepodge. Oh, well, she had plenty of time to browse through the shelves. She came to the study door, put her hand on the knob, and paused. Odd. She sniffed. Did she smell smoke? Only a trace, as if someone had just blown out a candle. Ridiculous. She was allowing the gothic thrill of Frankenstein to cloud her thinking. This was present-day London. Nothing exciting ever happened to her. She shook the silly, fanciful thoughts from her head and opened the door. Her candle went out. Damn. She stepped toward the fire to relight it and felt a breeze. The French window was open. Why? A strong arm snaked around her waist, and a broad, naked hand clamped over her mouth. She was hauled up against a hard male chest. Dear God! She swung her candlestick but only managed to knock over the hideous statue of Pan on the desk. She couldn't turn and pummel the man behind her. He was too strong. But he was taller than she. She flung her weapon up and back this time and collided with something bloody. The man took his hand off her mouth to grab for the candlestick. She drew in a deep breath. This was her opportunity. No one would hear her scream, of course. The servants were too far away and likely too drunk to come to her aid. But this miscreant didn't know that. She yelled as loud as she could. Hell, woman, you just broke my eardrum. I'll break more than that, sirrah, if you don't release me immediately. Odd. The man's voice had sounded educated and very faintly familiar. He chuckled. Who would have thought you were such a hellion? Hellion? Ha! She hadn't grown up with two older brothers for nothing, and a younger brother as well. If he gave her just an inch, he'd be sorry. She screamed again and thrashed more vigorously. Will you stop that? Not until you let me go, you... Oof! He'd managed to twist her to face him. His left arm was now around her back, his right hand on the candlestick, and his mouth... Heavens above! His mouth was descending! She gasped. The moonlight revealed his identity just before his lips touched hers. She was being held and... Well, kissed by Viscount Motton. Her fingers loosened and the candlestick crashed to the floor. Neither of them bothered with it. The candle was out. It wasn't going to set anything aflame. The Viscount was setting her aflame. She was surrounded by his scent, eau de cologne and leather, and him. His mouth covered hers, but she'd lost all desire to scream. No, her desire was headed in an entirely different direction. She felt boneless, like her knees would give out at any moment. His lips moved, brushed hers, nibbled at the corner of her mouth, and then meandered over her cheek to a very sensitive spot on her neck, just under her ear. She'd never been kissed before. Well, never like this. This was an entirely new experience, a wonderful experience. What was the man doing here? He lived next door. And yes, she'd occasionally tried to time her daily walks to catch a glimpse of him. Had he mistaken the house, gone astray? His mouth moved farther down her neck, his hands wandering lower to skim her bottom. Oh, he was going very much astray. Should she be alarmed? No, he must not mean her any harm. He knew her brothers, and he had an unblemished reputation. Oh, he was stroking her bottom now. Her nightdress was so old and worn, it was almost as if his hand were on her bare skin. She dreamed of some day getting a dance with the man, of feeling his gloved hand on hers, and now... They were quite alone. No one would know if she took advantage of this odd situation. He'd come back to her mouth. Was that his tongue touching her lips? What would happen if she... Oh! His tongue slid between her teeth. How disgusting! Well, it should be disgusting, but it was not. Actually, once one got over the shock, it was rather wonderful. He tasted of brandy, and he filled her with wet heat. Her mouth was not the only part of her that was very hot and wet. Her stomach, well, lower than her stomach, was embarrassingly damp. If she was still capable of feeling embarrassment, which she apparently wasn't, and throbbing, an odd hollowness opened there, wanting something. She had three brothers. Her mother was an artist with more than one nude painting in her studio. She had never been shy about explaining things. Mama might not want her daughters reading novels, but she did want them to know certain facts of life. And Jane had been 11 when Lucy was born. She'd asked quite a few questions. She had a good idea what her body was aching for, and what part of Lord Motton's physique could provide what she needed. It had formed a hard ridge against her belly. His hands were moving again, one still tracing the contours of her derriere, the other sliding up to... Oh, oh, heavens! All rational thought fled as his fingers cradled her breast. Motton was lost in a flood of sensation. The feel of this woman, so soft in his arms, her lovely curves unshielded by stays or layers of clothing, the taste of her sweet mouth under his, the smell of her skin, of lemon, a hint of purity, of innocence, and the musk of heat and need, the sound of her small gasps. She had been so feisty, so fiery at first, but now she was yielding and feminine and thoroughly seductive. Fiery, but in an entirely different way. He certainly felt as if he were on fire. His cock was just about ready to burn a hole in his breeches. He pulled her bottom closer, bringing her more tightly against his poor straining member, but the pressure only served to stoke the flames higher. His other hand cupped one of her lovely breasts. It was firm, soft, perfect. It fit his palm as if it had been made for it. He ran his lips over her jaw as he rubbed his thumb over her nipple. The lovely woman in his arms gasped. He chuckled and kissed her just below her ear as he flicked the hard little nub once more. She gasped again. He almost gasped. Standing was becoming a bit of a challenge. Unfortunately, the love seat was far too small, but there was the desk. She'd thoughtfully cleared it of that obscene statue. At the moment, he'd wager his cock was far larger than Pan's in any event. She was running her hands down his back, spreading them over his buttocks, pressing him against her. He cradled her jaw and returned to her mouth. Before he could plunge inside, she slipped her tongue tentatively past his lips and teeth. Ah, who would have thought this girl would be so delicious, so responsive, so virginal, so respectable, so closely related to two of his friends. He froze. He'd actually been thinking of lifting Miss Parker Roth onto the bare desktop, raising her nightdress, and... Sanity came crashing back like a migraine. He straightened and jerked his hips back. What are you doing? The soft little words were hardly more than a whisper. She sounded completely confused. She looked completely seductive. But it was past time he started thinking with his brain and not his long past. He tried to push her gently away from him, but she wasn't moving. She wrapped her arms around his back and held on. Miss Parker Roth.
Jane?
What? Jane? My name is Jane. Had he known her Christian name? No, he'd never paid much attention to her, frankly. She'd just been another attractive item decorating the Tones ballrooms, like a potted palm or a ficus tree. Little had he known.
What's your name?
The question hit him in the gut. Surely she knew whom she'd been kissing. And rather more than kissing, actually. He found he didn't at all care for the notion that he was just an anonymous male. Motton. She shook her head.
I know that. I want to know your name.
Ah, his Christian name. No one called him by that except the aunt. It felt rather intimate to share it with her. Edmund.
Edmund?
She murmured it as if she were exploring how it felt on her tongue. Damn, he could not think of Jane, of Miss Parker Roth, and tongues. Her tongue had been so sweet, so shy. He would dearly love to feel it on. Think with your brain, Motton. He firmly detached the woman and stepped back out of her reach. Miss Parker Roth, it cannot have escaped your attention that we are in a dark room without a chaperone, and you are in your night clothes. She grinned, the minx.
Yes, I know.
I shudder to think what society would say were it to learn of this... What? Scandal? Disaster? Monumental lapse in judgment? All of the above? This situation. And why wasn't Miss Parker Roth having the vapours? Surely a gently bred miss should be in hysterics at the treatment she had just received. Not that she'd been struggling. Oh, no, she'd been a very active, a very willing participant. She dimpled up at him. She did have a most attractive smile.
Oh, don't go all poker-faced.
It wasn't his face that was pokerish. If he didn't start thinking about something besides Jane, Miss Parker Roth's tongue and soft bottom and lovely breasts, he was not going to be able to light a candle and reveal his very impolite proportions. Blast! His proportions just got even more shocking. Miss Parker Roth had moved so her back was to the hearth. There was sufficient illumination from the fire's embers to reveal a tantalizing glimpse of her waist and legs and... He turned away to step closer to the open window. It was suddenly infernally hot in the damn study.
Society won't say anything because no one will find out, she was saying. As you point out, there are no witnesses, and I'm not going to go blabbing about.
She paused, and he glanced back at her.
He'd wager if there were enough light, he'd see her face had turned bright red.
His eyes dropped. There was definitely enough light to see.
I'm not going to blab about what we were doing, she said. Are you?
No, of course not. He had to stop staring at her chest. He jerked his attention back to her face. I am not a complete idiot.
Well then, there you are.
Jane frowned. She was suddenly feeling very out of sorts.
Here she'd just had the most wonderful experience of her life with the man she'd dreamed of for years, and the fellow acted as if he could hardly bear to look at her. He'd turned as prim and proper as her stiff-rumped brother John.
John, thankfully, was not in London with them this season. He'd gone off to Baron Tynwyth's estate. Odd, since the Baron's parties were often disreputable, but John had said something about topiary when he'd left the Priory. Plants were John's passion, unlike Stephen, his only passion.
What was Lord Motton's passion?
She'd like to taste a little more of his passion. Her dreams had not come close to the reality of it.
Unfortunately, the man did not look at all willing to repeat his thrilling performance.
And now that she looked at him, really looked at him, she saw he was dressed most peculiarly. Every article of clothing he wore was black. Black shirt, black cravat, black breeches, black stockings, and he had dispensed with a coat and waistcoat. Well, she'd vaguely noted those omissions when she'd been plastered up against him. It was almost as if he wished to blend into the shadows. Why? More to the point, why was he here at all, and how had he gotten in? Mr. Hunt, the butler, was at Mrs. Brindle's party. He kept looking down at her chest. Had she spilled chocolate there, too, when she'd had her accident with her wrapper this morning? She looked down. Oh. She darted behind one of the wing chairs. Thank God its back was high and she was not terribly tall. Damnation! If Lord Martin was truly a gentleman, he'd offer her his coat. He didn't have a coat. Oh, bother! He bowed briefly and cleared his throat. Ahem. Well, I must be going. Do pardon my intrusion, and of course my apologies for the... He waved his hand vaguely. For my behaviour. He looked ready to go out the window. Well, that answered the question of how he'd gotten in, but he certainly wasn't leaving before she got some answers. She leapt back out from behind the chair and grabbed his arm.
Wait! You must tell me why you're here.
He frowned at her. Miss Parkeroth, please control yourself. He sounded far too much like John. She considered uttering one of the very improper words she'd learned from Stephen, but she restrained herself.
I'll make you tell me.
He snorted, shook off her grasp, and turned. She latched onto the back of his shirt.
Will you stop?
I have two older brothers, a younger brother, and two younger sisters. I know all about blackmail and coercion.
He didn't even bother to reply. He just pulled her hand off his shirt and kept going. She hurried after him, out through the French window onto the terrace.
I'll tell your aunts what happened here tonight.
That got him to pause. You wouldn't.
You'd ruin yourself.
Not if I tell your Aunt Winifred. She's not such a high stickler. I saw her arrive today with Theo and Edmund.
Oh!
Jane covered her mouth with her hand, but her snicker still escaped.
She named the monkey after you, didn't she?
Lord Martin sighed. Surely Miss Parkeroth would not be so bold as to tell Winifred about this evening. If she did. Well, Aunt Winifred was awake on every suit. She would immediately see a golden opportunity to push him into Parson's mousetrap. And she would be right. He would be bound to marry Miss Parkeroth if word of this encounter ever did get out. He couldn't be alone with a young unmarried woman in her nightdress without offering for her. And they hadn't just been standing around discussing the weather. He waited for anger to surge through him. He'd spent years avoiding marriage traps. But to be fair, Miss Parkeroth hadn't set out to trap him. He'd brought this on himself. Not that he'd foreseen the risk when he'd agreed to search Widmore's study. And kissing her had been extremely pleasant. He didn't feel angry, he felt... He didn't know how he felt. Miss Parkeroth was uncommonly attractive in that virginal nightdress with her hair in a long braid down her back. He'd like to spread her hair out over her shoulders and run his hands through it. It was a warm brown with hints of red. Why had he never noticed her before? She must have been at all those dreadful society events over the years. The answer was simple. He'd not been in the market for a wife, and John and Stephen's sister was not a suitable candidate for dalliance.
I'm waiting, Lord Martin.
And she was getting chilly. He could see her nipples peeking against her nightgown. He'd like to make them harden for him. Come inside, and I'll tell you as much as I know. Which isn't much. He took her arm and turned her back to the study.
I would advise you not to try pulling the wool over my eyes.
She jutted out her lower jaw. She looked quite pugnacious. He smiled briefly as he seated her in a wing chair and turned away to light the candles.
He could easily bamboozle her if he wished. He'd had far more experience with deception than she, no matter how many...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?